Coming to you live from the west side of the I Street Bridge, it's The Nate Darling Show.
Call me sir, goddammit.
With Jason Casey and Kareem Daniels. And now, trust him. He's a professional.
Pardon my French, but you're an asshole.
Here's Nate.
Hey, everybody. What's going on? Kareem, how are you?
I'm great.
Jason, how are you?
Doing awesome.
Jason has lost his beard. We should have waited. If I'd known the story was that great, I would have had you told it on the show. But Jason now beard. Maybe we'll do it next week.
Yeah, maybe.
Tell it on the show. So we'll see what happens. We'll see how it goes. Coming up on the show today, the return of sex toy news. And it's dangerous.
Oh.
There is a new cryptocurrency out there. And it's silly.
That's silly.
And I had to talk about this because I saw the headline that Quelly TV is Netflix for black people by black people, starring black people. And since I'm doing a show...
It's Quelly TV.
See? That's why I need Kareem here. It's not... It's spelled wrong, then. Seriously.
That's the way it's spelled.
Well, then it's you're pronouncing it wrong.
No. No, you can talk to Talib about that.
Just telling you. K-W-E-L-I. Quelly.
Quelly.
Quelly. Look, it's clearly not for me anyway. I think we made that abundantly clear here. So, all of those things. Before we get to all of that, we were all supposed to see Star Wars, and two of us did.
The two who actually watched the Star Wars, I've never seen any of them.
Oh, well, then, the fuck.
The fuck.
Let's briefly talk about Star Wars, Jason.
Okay.
First of all, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you like it? 10 being, oh my God, I creamed my jeans.
So I was like a 8.
Okay. What about it gives you that high a number?
Because it was a sci-fi action film that had it hit the marks. It was better than a lot of other films that I've seen that are sci-fi action films that take place in space. I mean, like, here's the thing, is like when I go to see a Star Wars film, like I'm not pinning my whole fucking childhood on this one fucking stupid piece of shit franchise.
Right.
Like Star Wars to me is a space opera. Star Wars, that was okay when I was a kid. Like Return of the Jedi, I was dope because I was 7 years old. Like it was awesome. But Phantom Menace and that shit was weak. Like I was not into any of that shit.
Right.
Like the last one, the Force Awakens, is like, wow, this is pretty cool. This is pretty, I like this.
Right, because it was essentially A New Hope all over again.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I mean, yeah, so what, and I saw that it was New Hope again also, but it was, I'm not going into it with any preconceived, like, I really like film. I like movies, and I'm not going to go into it, like, with a I was trying to not to,
What does that mean? I like film. I like movies. I'm just going to stop you. I need you to clarify.
So
what
when
that
I say
means.
I like films, I like, I mean, I know Fritz Lang. I've watched Fritz Lang films. All right. So Scarlet Street. I like Edward G. Robinson films from the 30s and the 40s. And like, I've also seen Wild Strawberries and Persona. And I also like Lars von Trier, who did, Breaking the Waves. Like, I watched a lot of movies.
He's a film snob.
I've watched a lot of films. So
have you seen The Room?
I've not seen The Room.
Well, then you clearly have not.
No, because it came out in the fucking 2000s, and like it was a piece of shit. Like, people that I knew like thought it was actively like a joke, and like I think I had an opportunity to go watch it, and I was like, I don't want to go fucking waste my time on a stupid film. Like, I've never been a huge fan of Rocky Horror Picture Show. I've seen it because it's film and it's a cult classic. I've also seen Pink Flamingos, and I'm not gonna fucking watch that shit again either. You know what I mean? Like, so with all that knowledge of like all the films that I've watched and stuff like that, sure. You know, like, me going in to see a Star Wars film is to go see a fucking Star Wars film. So if they show me another Star Wars film with different people that I find interesting and I can kind of connect with, then I'm probably going to really like it. And it's going to be fun, you know? And it was fun. And this movie, it was fun. It was all right. It was good. You know, it wasn't like, here's the thing. It's like, it's coming off of Rogue One, which was a stellar film. That was a really well, like, put together. Like, that was a, I think that people have an idea of, you didn't like Rogue One?
Dude, we turned off Rogue One.
Really? You didn't like it?
We turned off Rogue One about 45 minutes in.
All right.
I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Granted, it's on Netflix, so you have the opportunity. I would not have walked out of it in the theater.
Yeah.
But we did turn it off on Netflix.
Because
we were tremendously bored.
Yeah. I could see how it could bore some people, without a doubt. Yes.
And I had heard that before, that, the last 20 minutes of Rogue One is really good and the rest of it is boring. I had heard that assessment.
I would not watch it Rogue One again.
Beforehand.
There's a lot of films that I've watched.
I enjoy that you're getting all fired up about Star Wars when I just asked you to define the phrase, I like film.
So anyhow, this movie was, I did not like it as much. So maybe it's closer to 7.5.
Okay.
The more I think about it, maybe it's like, 'cause I really liked Force Awakens, but Force Awakens was maybe like an 8 or a 9. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to necessarily say it was as good as that. But I also don't say, like, there's people, I don't know, man. It's just people pin a lot of shit on that franchise, just like the Star Trek. And I love Star Trek also. You know what I mean? Like, I like a lot of shit.
And I will say this. It was definitely a Star Wars film. I thought it was a good movie. I didn't think it was a great movie. I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah.
I don't regret going.
Yeah.
I will not bash it. It was a little too long. We could have shortened a lot of those scenes up. A lot of those scenes were a little too long. They didn't need that much breathing room. Some more stuff could have ended up on the cutting room floor. There was a lot of time just wandering around the island. Oh, you're still here? Yep. Okay. That was boring.
Yeah, there was some stuff there that could have...
There was a lot of stuff you could have cut out of. It was 2 hours and 40 minutes, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
It's a long film.
It was long.
If you make that 2:15, it moves much quicker.
Yeah.
There is also an agenda to the Star Wars movie.
Now I'm glad I didn't see it.
which was... You have, and without too much of a spoiler in this, and if you haven't seen Star Wars yet, shame on you. If you say you want to, because you've got this hotshot pilot, Poe, okay? Hero of the first movie. One of the heroes of the first movie, played by Oscar Isaacs. And he has moved up in the ranks, and then he leads this mission that doesn't go well. And he gets demoted because he's made poor decisions by Princess Leia. And he doesn't take it well. Not surprising. And then further things come along. And another woman later on reminds him, you've been demoted. Go away, boy. Your way of doing things doesn't work. Go ahead and stop that and go back to your quarters and let the ladies run everything. There was a very clear message about that. And I have no problem with female heroes and female leads and female protagonists. I thought Rey was fine in this movie. She did a great job. There was another character, the Asian character that went on the raid.
Yeah.
I thought she was fantastic. I thought it was a really appropriate character. There was her sister who, and unfortunately, spoiler alert, been killed earlier in the film. I thought that was a strong use of female. You can have strong female characters. And you can have them in positions of power. Where they are asserting their power over males and females. And everybody else. Without feeling the need to emasculate your characters. And that's kind of what they did. And that led to bad things. Let's emasculate him. Oh, now something bad's going to happen. Ha ha. There was that whole message in there that wasn't really necessary. And I was also wondering, did they really get all of Carrie Fisher's stuff shot before she died? Or are they going to kill Princess Leia in the movie? I'm not spoiling that one. So, all that said, it was a little too long. There was a little bit of preachiness in it. I thought it was a good movie. I would say it was 6.5, 7 for in total as a movie, as a Star Wars movie. Better than 1, 2, and 3. Easily better than 1, 2, and 3. I think that's probably where it lands.
Yeah, I think it's maybe better than Return of the Jedi. Just because I never really... I mean, like, Return of the Jedi...
A lot of people love Return of the Jedi. Love Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I will put it on par with Return of the Jedi. I will say that's a tie. That's a tie.
I can give it that.
But it was a good movie.
Yeah.
Now, that said, if you have not seen Jumanji with The Rock and Kevin Hart... Go see Jumanji with The Rock and Kevin Hart, because that movie was a delight. Now, to be fair, I went in not expecting a whole lot of Jumanji with The Rock and Kevin Hart. I've seen Central Intelligence.
I couldn't even finish that one, man.
I made myself finish that one. It was amusing. I like The Rock a lot, and I enjoy Kevin Hart. But everybody in the movie... was good. The story made sense. It was way more fun than I was expecting to have walking into the theater. Nice. Jumanji was a good movie. And I think it was better than Star Wars.
Well, this last weekend on the box office, it won over Star Wars.
So there you go.
I might have to check out Jumanji. I'm not going to see Star Wars.
Now, I mean, you've never seen a Star Wars movie, so...
Yeah, there's no reason to go.
Right.
Especially not if it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long.
It's long. Actually, Insidious, The Last Key beat Star Wars this week, too.
Yeah.
So, that's not really... Star Wars has been out a while at this point.
Has it been out for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks,
it's
5 weeks?
It's been out at least a month.
Yeah.
I've never heard of Insidious, The Last Key. I don't know how that's second.
I've seen so many commercials for that movie.
But here's the other thing I will tell you. So I'm on Rotten Tomatoes right now. So Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay. I like looking at Rotten Tomatoes because it gives you a kind of an idea of being able to compare critics to audience. So as I'm looking at these, let me wait for this to come up because the internet hates me here. All right, Jumanji. The tomato meter, 75%. That's among critics. That's certified fresh. The audience, 90% liked it with an average rating of 4.4 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun movie. It's just kind of a fun movie.
And what was the, The Last Jedi?
The Last Jedi.
I think that's like in it.
It's 90% on the tomato meter, Jason, and 49% with the audience, with an average rating of 3 out of 5, which is about 60%. I think that's dead on. And there are a lot of people burying it. I don't think the movie deserves to be buried. It was okay. It was a fun Star Wars movie. The scene on the salt where it turns red when they're scooting along. There were some amazing visual effects and things going on there. By the way, I hated Laura Dern in this. Hated Laura Dern in Star Wars.
Yeah. I wasn't.
What has Laura Dern been good in?
Not really sure. Insidious, The Last Key... that's getting 28% on the tomato meter and a 58% score with the audience, which, by the way, is higher than Star Wars. Now, The Greatest Showman, which was nominated for a butt ton of Golden Globes this last week, got a 90% score from the audience and a 56% score from the critics. I don't know why. Who's wrong here?
Normally
an audience score of 90 means it's a pretty good movie. I'm guessing a lot of critics
crapped on it because it's about the circus. And it's not okay to like the circus.
Well, it's about P.T. Barnum, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, like, he was not necessarily a... He's just like any man. He was flawed.
Right. And he was a man of his time. But
he was a man.
By the way, Pitch Perfect 3 at 31% Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm glad that I did not see that.
Yeah, well, there you go.
We're going to see Molly's Game this weekend.
Molly's Game?
Yes.
I don't know what that... Oh, there it is. Yeah, there it is. Sorry. I don't know all your black movies, Kareem.
I've heard I, Tonya's was
This is not a black movie.
I open it up, and the first thing I see is a black man looking right at me. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do. It's Jessica Chastain and Idris Elba.
Yes.
So
this is... That movie is actually based on a true story.
I see that. Yeah, there's a lot of good movies out, and a lot of things that I want to see. So.
And Proud Mary comes out this week.
Mm-hmm. Stuff. You know, I will admit every now and then a news story slips through the cracks that we should have brought to you.
Mm.
And in this case, let me get to this and then we'll get to Dave Chappelle in a little bit here. Back last summer, there was a new state law that went into effect in Texas that allowed knives and swords in public places. That's right. It's now legal for anyone to walk down the street carrying a sword, even a machete, in Texas. House Bill 1935 allows long knives, daggers, and even spears to be legally taken out into public. The author of the bill, Representative John Frullo, says its main purpose is to simplify laws pertaining to knives and limit their restrictions. Accidents happen and people misuse things, he said, so any of that can apply to a knife just as well as it could a gun. And we allow people to carry them everywhere, so what the fuck? So the
Do
only
I even have to say it?
Yes, go ahead.
White people are stupid. God. Are we going back to the Middle Ages? We're going to have sword fights?
Maybe. Basically, Texas is just going to do away with all laws eventually.
Oh, my God.
They're on their way to Florida-dom. Florida-dom. Dum 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 dum. All right. Let's lighten the mood now after that nonsense. With this, I saw this and I'm like, "Hey, what's this?" It's Jibo. The
I'm Jibo.
First social robot for the home. I don't know that that's the best thing ever.
You want to get you one, Jason?
What the fuck is it?
It's a social robot for the home. I think this is... Oh, there it is. So there's Jibo Music plus iHeartRadio. So it's a speaker that plays your favorite genres and stations and dances. It's a dancing robot. It's a dancing robot speaker that has a fake blinking. Yeah, he's wired differently, Jason.
Fuck that shit, man.
Yeah, we're going to get you one of those. Christmas 2018, Jibo for Jason.
Okay. He has vision. They use facial recognition technology. They use the camera to remember each person. So he will know the difference between you, your wife, and your daughter. His camera makes him the perfect hands-free photographer. All you have to do is ask, and he'll capture images of special moments, which you can access and share right from the Jibo app.
Your birthday is in November, too, huh?
December.
December.
The anniversary.
Oh yeah, we can get you a birthday and Christmas gift, Jibo.
So here's the other thing. He's got moves. So before he speaks, natural language processing algorithms and an advanced animation system help Jibo analyze sentence structure of what he's about to say and then choreograph movements to go along with it. So whether it's a flashy spin or a fun dance, he's never shy to express himself. So he's like an Italian guy. He's got 6 microphones to identify and recognize voices and report you to the government. His natural language understanding, one of the coolest abilities, recognizes speech patterns and tones and beam-forming algorithms to help him detect where sounds are coming from. So when you talk, he'll know who you are, and he'll turn your way and talk back without missing a beat. Are you excited or scared?
There's a touch screen on his face as well.
Stop touching me.
He's stereo. There's a speaker on each side of his head, as they say. They're calling it his head. Sometimes the most impressive thing about his speech isn't always what he says, but how he says it. The team of character writers created movements to help him express himself so he knows exactly how to add personality and a hint of surprise to everything he says. So, who's in on Jibo?
We're getting one for Jason for his birthday.
Is this going to be the next thing? Now.
Yeah, you guys will get that for my next birthday.
Look, we're going to have to start saving now. Because Jibo is $900.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that. I don't like you.
And here's what you get. Free software updates, a one Jibo social robot, one charging cable, a quick start guide. Oh, that's mighty white of you. And a 1-year limited manufacturer's warranty. The mobile and Wi-Fi requirements, you need Apple iOS 9 or above, Android KitKat 4.4.4 or above, a Wi-Fi network, and for the best experience, Jibo requires a broadband internet connection. So none of your dial-up bullshit. Let's see, they give you a discount if you order a bunch?
So I had to find some, I have to call my mom and tell her before she comes to Panama, see if somebody can get one off the back of a truck.
Time magazine named it one of the 25 best inventions of 2017. If someone were to give it to you free, would you take it and put it in your home, Kareem?
No.
And why not?
It's just creepy. I'm not fucking with anything that's facial recognition. It's bad enough that you got my thumbprint. I'm not, no.
Now, do you have an Alexa or a Google Home in your house?
We have an Alexa that we unplug all the time.
Jason, would you take Jibo as a gift and put him in your home?
Yeah, I mean, I have a Google Home, so yeah, and I have a Kinect, so, I mean, it already knows how many beats per minute my heart's beating, so.
My iWatch knows that. Yeah. Excuse me. I don't know that I would. It's kind of weird to me. I think it looks like a cute little face and a blinking eye, but I don't know.
Man, I'm also thinking about getting some cryptocurrency, bro, because when the AI takes over, if you're known as a good person to the AI, you'll survive, bro.
Cryptocurrency is only as good as the people that believe in cryptocurrency.
Yeah. It's like Jesus. wait a minute. Hold on. I've stumbled onto something. We've stumbled onto something. Anyway, let's, that being said, I thought Jibo was a good lead in, ironically enough to this.
Lean back, relax, and enjoy sex toy news.
That's right. Hacked sex robots could murder people. They could murder people, according to a security expert. Oh. I already went through this fucking ad once, you a-holes.
Son of a biscuit eater.
That's right. Your sex robot could be hijacked and kill you. Why not Jibo?
Hello and welcome to Ivy Times TV. I'm Marisa Christian. According to a pair of New Zealand researchers, sex robots are the future of prostitution. The two claim that robot prostitutes will completely revolutionize the sex tourism industry by 2050. The paper titled Robots, Men, and Sex Tourism, published in the journal Futures, claims robot sex is safe, free from constraints, precautions, and the uncertainties of the real deal. The paper described a futuristic imaginary sex club in Amsterdam called Yub Yum, where tourists pay 10,000 euros for massages, lap dances, and sex from sex robots moving around the club. Yub Yum would include sexual, quote, gods and goddesses of different ethnicities, body shapes, ages, languages, and sexual features. The bonus is that the futuristic environment would be free of sexually transmitted diseases because the sex robots would be made of bacteria-resistant fiber that would be flushed of human fluids after use. Real dolls, which have been featured on Howard Stern and HBO's Real Sex, are already popular on the sex market, ranging in price from $5,000 to $11,000. The New Zealand researchers Yeoman Mars said they came up with their predictions based on the growth of the sex industry, the human fascination with beauty, and the predicted social reforms to combat human trafficking. Marisa Christian, Abbey Times TV.
Okay, so that being said, sex robots could be hijacked by hackers and used to cause harm or even kill people. That's according to a cybersecurity expert. Artificial intelligence researchers have consistently warned of the security risks posed by internet-connected robots, with hundreds recently calling on governments to ban weaponized robots. The latest warning comes from a cybersecurity expert who made the prophecy to several UK newspapers, saying hackers can hack into a robot or robotic device and have full control of the connection, arms, legs, and other attached tools, like in some cases, knives or welding devices. BattleBots. Often these robots can be upward of 200 pounds and very strong. Once a robot is hacked, it's not strength, it's horsepower. Once a robot is hacked, the hacker has full control and can issue instructions to the robot. The last thing you want is for a hacker to have control over one of these robots. Once hacked, they could absolutely be used to perform physical actions for an advantageous scenario or to cause damage. Researchers have already discovered security flaws with Bluetooth-enabled sex toys, where hackers could control from remote locations. One such example of a vulnerable butt plug was revealed last year. I believe we had it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Experts wrote a commentary for the scientific journal Nature that outlined a scenario in which rogue artificial intelligence hijacked a brain-computer interface. In such a situation, a person's thoughts, decisions, and emotions could be taken over by AI and manipulated against the person's will. Right from the butt plug. No, that's completely different. A hypothetical example of how a scenario might play out, according to the authors of the piece, would be if a paralyzed man using brain-computer interface took a dislike to someone. That could be misinterpreted as a command to harm that person, even if no direct order is given.
So what if it got struck by lightning and it rewired the whole system?
Right?
And it just decided to butt plug, to destroy every butt plug in the world.
Well, if it were in a drawer, you'd be all right. But, yeah, I mean, if it was butt plug time, here's the thing about, dangerous sex robots. We've been warned of this before. We have. I mean, it was in a film, but you really should have been paying attention.
Any suggestions?
Ja wohl, Herr Doktor. I have created the ultimate weapon to defeat Austin Powers. Bring in the bats! You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. These are the latest words. Android replicant technology. Lethal, efficient, brutal. No man can resist that shot. Send in the guys!
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do.
Kill these women!
These boots are gonna walk all over you.
They can't kill them because they're pretty fembots. So the guns go down, they start walking toward them. And then the barrels come out of their titties. We've been warned. Use your hand. Use your hand. And save humanity.
Save yourself.
That's right. Save yourself.
Oh, did you ever watch The Big Bang Theory?
No.
So there's an episode of The Big Bang Theory where Wolowitz has a robot arm and he's using it to masturbate.
Sure. As one does.
And
then he gets a mind of its own.
Yes.
Well, that's not the end of sex toy news.
Of course not.
Which is the good news. If you're on the East Coast, it's below zero outside, and you and your partner decide to create your own sparks with a little between-the-sheets action. You pull out your favorite sex toy, and it's freezing to the touch.
Oh, it's true.
Total buzzkill, right?
Every time.
Well, thanks to the folks behind what might be the world's first official sex toy warmer, you'll never be faced with an ice-cold vibrator again.
What?
That's right. It's appropriately called warm. It's made of a soft vegan leather.
Vegan leather?
Vegan leather.
Get the fuck out of here with your vegan leather.
And looks a lot like a trendy clutch bag. Yeah, put your toys and lubricants inside it and plug it into the wall. It uses low voltage wattage to heat up your pleasure gadgets to your ideal temperature in less than 20 minutes. Warm is available online at sex toy stores, and it retails for $149.
You gotta be serious about your toys.
Well,
I can say people that are serious about their toys.
It sounds like a bad idea because you're not supposed to heat batteries, especially nickel cadmium batteries, NiCad batteries, like past a certain point. It's pretty bad for them. Like, they can explode and catch on fire.
Well, I'm sure this doesn't heat it up past body temperature. It's not going to blow up at body temperature.
Yeah, and then the hot vibrator is just as bad as a cold one.
Yeah, maybe worse. Some people will put a vibrator in the freezer just to get that extra sensation.
That's it.
That's how I do it.
Ain't nobody trying to heat it up.
No one's microwaving their dildo.
No.
So how did this little genius appliance get its start? Well, it was the product of a passionate night between its creators, LJ and Janine. Apparently, LJ decided to warm up his sex toys, thinking it would bring Janine more pleasure. The heat actually did enhance sensation, as heat does. With that, a brilliant and sex-positive idea was born. You know, sir, when I first saw the initials, I thought it was LL Cool J. I thought, he don't care enough to do that.
Oh, I know. He loves the ladies.
Well, Janine
love Cool James, man.
Janine said, to have foreplay taken to such a whole new level, one that involves something being prepared completely for my indulgent pleasure, broke my ability to receive pleasure and intimate connection in a way I'd never experienced. As our relationship continued, I discovered passions I didn't even know I had. One of those I realized was to find a way to make what I was enjoying into a marketable product so others could feel the difference, too. Yeah. Capitalism, right in her pussy. What it is. This is not sex toy news, but apparently in Thailand, they're doing penis whitening.
Yeah, yeah.
I sent the article to Kareem, and he said no, because he thinks it means it would make his penis smaller.
Sammy Sosa might be okay with it. But no.
Now, here's a fun fact for you. So, let's say there's a black guy dating a white girl, and her parents are racist. Crazy scenario, right?
Right.
But he decides, I'm going to make it better and make it all okay. And he gets his penis whitened. Because then when he's introduced, she can let her parents know that the part of him that goes in is white. And he cared enough to make it white for them. Plausible?
That's exactly how it works, right?
She's like, no, motherfucker, I wanted it black, that's why I'm with you.
Look, if her eyes are closed and rolling back in her head, she doesn't care what color it is.
Yeah.
That's a fact, Jack, that's why they make purple dildos. So, anyway, that's sex toy news.
Oh, man.
By the way, if you really want to get some sex toys, Amazon has those too, and if you're going to get them, go ahead and click that Shop Amazon tab at NateDarlingShow.com. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It helps support the show. Yeah, thanks.
Why haven't you done it yet? Why haven't you?
Mm-hmm. You can do all of that. I would, except unless you're like in private mode, it will track what you've looked at. And if you ever look at Amazon at work, It will then go, here are some items related to what you were shopping for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta be careful with that.
Yeah. It's like, so you better go back and check out a lot of really deep, heavy books. Like, oh, you're reading Vonnegut, huh? Yep. Love Vonnegut.
Got to bury it in the history.
That's right. Love Vonnegut.
Cat's Cradle is amazing.
Totally. Totally amazing. All right. I was going to talk. So supposedly, I hope Business Insider was not duped, because this is hilarious. There was a pair. Oh, now hold on. Oh no, here we go. 16 hours ago. There is a new cryptocurrency called Doggy Coin. That's right, Doggy Coin. And if you're familiar with the internet and memes that go back, you'll be familiar with Doggy Coin. In fact, they sponsored a stock car. There it is. It's the dog. You know the dog, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
That is the face of Doggy Coin. It was launched back in 2013, inspired by a short-lived online craze for pictures of a particularly Japanese dog breed. Last weekend, however, it nearly doubled its value and is now worth... I don't know what BN is. I'm guessing...
That's billion.
Billion. So it's worth $2 billion. It's been steadily gaining all through December. The latest spike has prompted howls of crypto hype from the skeptics. Granted, it's still well behind the biggest beast in the digital currency pack, which is Bitcoin, which has a value of more than $270 billion. But given that Doggy Coin was initially intended as a parody of Bitcoin, its founder, Jackson Palmer, is none too happy now that it's slipped its leash. Said, the fact that most conversations happening in the media between peers focus on investment potential is worrying, he said. Until its recent rise, it was actually little known beyond a small group of geeks. But in sporting circles, the cryptocurrency's backers have gained a reputation for some unorthodox sponsorship choices. In 2014, a U.S. stock car racing became the surprise beneficiary when they decided to give a helping hand to NASCAR driver Josh Wise, giving $55,000 worth of digital currency. The same year, they raised $25,000 to send the Jamaican bobsled team to the Winter Olympics.
Hey, that sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Doggy coins are actually far more numerous than bitcoins. The rules underpinning Bitcoin say that only 21 million bitcoins can be created, and that figure is getting ever nearer. It's unclear what will happen to the value of bitcoins when they reach their limit. Doggy coins are mined in the same way as bitcoins. That is, they're created using a computer processing power. However, unlike Bitcoin, there's no upper limit on the number of doggy coins that can be produced, with a staggering 100 billion already in existence. That helps explain why each doggy coin is worth less than 2 U.S. cents, while Bitcoin's peak value to date was nearly $20,000.
Okay. So, for 2018, I decided that I would become a little bit more educated. So, I have subscribed to the Wall Street Journal.
Oh.
So, I'm reading the Wall Street Journal daily. I'm also listening to the great courses on banking, the history of banking.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the articles in the journal last week, see, I'm reading it long enough, I can call it the journal.
Sure.
Talks about Bitcoin and the fact that there only can only be that many.
Right.
Is the reason why it's valuable. So it's kind of like going back to the gold standard because it's only so much of it there.
Right, except gold actually exists.
Exactly. I concur with you there. Totally. and one of the other articles I read said that you should treat Bitcoin as a commodity, not as currency.
Right.
So when you're investing in that. But Bitcoin is only as valuable as people who are invested in it make it valuable.
Like Beanie Babies.
Yeah. So
More like Beanie Babies than Jesus, but go on.
Yeah, so as long as, and that's pretty much the history of currency. As long as people agree on the currency, it's valuable. Once people say, that's not valuable, then Bitcoin will go away.
Like Beanie Babies.
Like Beanie Babies.
Remember when Beanie Babies were, people were like, this Beanie Baby is worth $800. That Beanie Baby is worth $12.
Yes. It's as much as people will pay for it. And once people say, fuck it, I'm done with this, or whoever started it gets their money out of it and can figure out a way they can fuck everybody else over with it, it'll be gone.
Jason, what do you know about cryptocurrency and all of this nonsense?
I just know that I should have bought some 2 years ago when I could have bought it for like $13, $14. and, you know, I just know that there's, who knows, you know? I mean, like, man.
I agree with you. You should have bought it 2 years ago when you could have got it for $13 and sold that shit like today.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I would have done.
Here's my, I'm going to throw out a Kareem style conspiracy theory for you. The big thing right now, as Bitcoin and all of these other cryptocurrencies have gained value, is people are creating and making their own mining computers. And they're spending about $5,000 a pop.
Oh, wow.
On the processing power it takes to be running 24 hours a day, searching the internet for these mythical creatures.
Right.
Whether it's Bitcoin, Dogecoin, there's a bunch of them.
There's like 110,000 of them. Something crazy. It's a really large number.
Right. Literally anybody could make them.
Yeah.
So my theory is that this whole thing was created somewhere on the dark web, but the people behind it are the people at Intel. Because who makes the most computer processors in the world?
Intel.
Intel. And you'd have all of this processor power going for this very specific thing. People aren't actually using it on your, I mean, if your laptop is closed, you're not using your processing power. You're not using it.
Yeah.
And so they're not every, the more a processor is used, the more information gets fed back to the manufacturer. So they understand what works, what doesn't, how it works, what does this, what does that. So this is a self-perpetuating beast created by, I'm going to say Intel, because I don't think AMD has the smarts for this. I'm just saying that they are behind this whole thing. And when we find out, it's going to blow the lid off of Silicon Valley.
I bet you it's not. It's probably Applied Materials. It's actually behind it, like people making the wafers. Like,
that's a good one.
Right? See, anybody can make a conspiracy theory. I'm probably wrong, but there's just enough kernel of logic to set that one adrift in the universe.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been the big thing, is people are putting together these, and you know who else could be behind it? Power companies. Because these computers use a fuck ton of power.
Yeah.
And they put out a ton of heat, which means you got to run your air conditioning.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people on the East Coast that have put these like in their houses, and it's like 20 degrees outside, and they have to have the windows open because these computers are putting out so much heat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know
that. It's hot. So there's your conspiracy theory, and it came from me, which is different. All right. Now it's time to talk about, how do you say that, Kareem?
Quali TV.
That's not how you pronounce it, but okay. Netflix, for black people, by black people, and starring black people. It aims to be the go-to streaming media platform for black filmmakers all over the world to share their content and make money from its distribution. It handpicks all of its content, with 98% of the content having been official selections at film festivals worldwide. So, Kareem, is this something that you subscribe to?
It is not, but I'm going to check it out.
There is, I think it's like a week free trial?
Yeah. I read the article, and some of the stuff, I like the idea behind it. Because it says, on the third paragraph, it's talked about authentic black storytelling from a black perspective. And
right.
That is true. we do get caught up in a lot of the stereotypes. And I don't know if you've ever seen, Hollywood Shuffle, but there's a stereotype. I mean, there's a, scene in Hollywood Shuffle. It's a movie by Robert Townsend,
mm-hmm.
Where he shows how the white directors try to tell the black people how to be black.
Right. Good Times.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like
Danny Bonaduce's dad was a writer on Good Times.
Yeah. And the reason why he was is because Michael Evans wrote the stories like regular people, and they were like, oh no, you have to make them get up. You have to make them blacker. And he was like, no, these are the black people I know. It's like, no, they're not as black enough.
They're not going to play with what white people expect black people to be.
Yeah. And in reading the article and thinking about, and I've said this before on the show too, most of the black people I know grew up in, nuclear homes where they had mother and father in the house. I'm like one of the few of my friends that actually didn't live with both of their parents. Their parents had two jobs. I got like one cousin who had a wife and kids who didn't live with them, but he came through, paid bills, dropped off money, whatever.
Right.
Took care of the family. And then even today, I have six sets of foster parents, and almost all of them are married, you know, professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I have a blood brother who's the oddball who's fucked it up for everybody because he has 10 kids by five different women. But everybody else is, you know, pretty.
To be fair, my friend Chris has a brother, and Chris is white, as white as white can be, from Washington State, has a brother, same exact thing.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
It's not a color thing. Yeah. It's a lack of judgment thing.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, well, why do you have to, like, if you can make a black show, why do they have to make a black show that seems like black people don't do the same shit that everybody else does?
Right.
So I like the idea of it. But and the other part of that idea is, showing black culture the way black culture is. Some of the shit is, we do a lot of the same things, we just do them different. That's
yeah.
You know, it's not right or wrong. It's just different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like I said, in, this whole Me Too thing, I realized there are certain things that go on in black families that don't go on in white families, or that go on in white families. Like black people raise their kids like Cam Newton. So keep your head on the swivel. You're going to have to do all the shit on your own sometimes. And we expect the same thing out of you as Eli Manning, who, dad stepped up for him, and white kid people were a kid like him. So where they have to have everything laid out for them in order for them to succeed. And it's like, no, we'll figure out the shit as we go.
Jason, will you be subscribing?
Probably not.
What kind of ally are you?
Right?
One that...
Really, take your black card away.
One that's on a budget. And already subscribes to Hulu without his wife knowing.
Damn, gentrifier.
Well, now she knows.
No, she does.
Well, your mother-in-law knows. She listens to the show.
She won't tell.
Okay.
Now we know how far his gentrification. Now we know how much of an ally he is.
Sue, we're counting on you to keep this little secret.
Yeah.
We're counting on you. I mean, come on.
It said, I'll move into your neighborhood and take your... your housing prices, but I won't subscribe to your television. Well,
to be fair, Jason was well on the back end of that wave. And we know, you know where the wave ends? MLK Boulevard. Drive through Oak Park. That's exactly where that wave of gentrification ends. You can see it. Literally see it.
Not if I can have my way.
Keep rolling on through. I think it's an interesting idea. I think it's great because there should be a place for everyone to be able to tell their story, and there's not going to be space for that necessarily on a bigger platform like a Netflix. Although Netflix totally could do it.
Well, Netflix has been doing it, but then they got cheap like last year. So they had the breakdown or whatever. They had a couple of shows that were doing well, but they became really expensive to produce, and then they dropped them. But.
Well, and that's the whole thing. So, I mean, and BET, Black Entertainment Television, hasn't been run by African Americans
in forever.
For quite a while.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that this is a place for filmmakers to go. And the fact that they are, in order to get recognized and get on this and get approached, you got to at least be in film festivals and winning awards. These are quality productions.
Yeah.
It's not just Leroy got himself a camera.
Exactly. I got that station on Amazon.
Yeah, right.
Leroy, I got a camera. All right. So at that, I would like to have a brief conversation about Dave Chappelle.
Okay.
Dave Chappelle, and when you were talking about the nuclear family, one of his specials, he talks about growing up in Silver Spring, Maryland, and that he doesn't know what the projects are like. He fronts like he does.
Yeah.
But he grew up because his parents did just well enough so that they could grow up poor in a nice neighborhood.
Yeah. But now Silver Springs actually is one of the higher economic black communities in the country, like that area.
Right. But what was it when Dave Chappelle was growing up, and where did his parents fall in? They made enough money to live there.
It was the beginnings of that.
Right.
When his parents moved in, but his parents weren't, I think his mom was a professor. I thought, but I could be getting him confused with, with a couple of rappers. Cause Kweli, Talib Kweli, his parents were professors, and I think Common and,
Kanye West. Kanye West's mom was a professor.
Kanye West's mom was a professor. And I think Common too. So I think I might be getting them confused with there, but, yeah, he did say that. That shit was hilarious.
Here's the thing. I watched them back to back.
Okay.
Which might have been a mistake. It's a lot of Chappelle. And there were a couple of parts where I found myself with my head tilted back and my mouth wide open, laughing like a jackass. There were other parts where through most of it, where I was listening, I was going, I get it. You're making a really great point. I wasn't laughing. It felt more like, to me, it felt like a spoken word show more than what a traditional stand-up would be. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. First one is more of a traditional stand-up show.
The one on the East Coast in front of the big crowd.
The one in the big crowd.
Yeah.
The second one is what he's been doing in stand-up probably for the last 10 years.
Right.
If you go to see him at the Punchline or a place like the Punchline,
he's going to smoke and blow it in your face.
Yeah, that's what you're going to get. That's the second one is that show.
Right.
And what he didn't do in the second one on the show, that he does normally is he engages the audience, when you see him live.
Mm-hmm.
And then half of the show will be about conversation. If he finds interesting people in the audience, then half the show will be about their conversation, about their life and about different things.
Some crowd work.
Crowd work, but it's thoughtful crowd work.
And that's what I got from. It felt like a spoken word show. Like, this is important shit I'm telling you, not I'm here to make you laugh.
Right. And
like, this is important shit you should know, and you're lucky because I'm going to make you laugh.
Yeah. That's a good take on that.
There were some absolutely slap my knee, laugh out loud moments.
Yeah.
In both of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely in both of them. But I think if you go in expecting a Chappelle show level of frequency of laughter, you're going to be a little disappointed in
right.
that.
So the last joke that he tells in the second special, the Iceberg Slim joke.
Yes. Didn't feel like a joke. That felt like a lesson. That felt like a spoken word lesson.
Okay, so I saw him do that joke 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
in at Radio City Hall in New York.
I just dropped a bottle cap. You can keep talking.
Okay. That's the first time I've heard that joke. And the special is the second time I've heard the joke. The first time I heard it was better. He added a couple of things to it that didn't necessarily make the joke better, but I understand why he added the things to it that he added to it.
Sure.
But the first time I saw him tell that joke was at Radio City with the Roots, two nights at Radio City with the Roots. I'm not going to fuck up the joke because I couldn't find the joke when I looked for the joke online on YouTube, I found it once and that person missed the last part of the joke, like the punchline of the joke.
Yeah. And that's kind of important.
That's kind of important. So watch the special and the second special, make sure you get to the end, watch that, that joke, because that's like that's probably the best joke I've ever heard. Point blank, period.
Well, and it's also the setup for his whole that's why I went to South Africa.
Yeah.
That's the story. So for me, it didn't really feel like a joke. It felt like just I'm dropping knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, the other part of that's particular special, because he caught a lot of shit about that in the Me Too thing from that special.
Yes.
New York Times ran an article that keeps popping up on my timeline, and I want to cuss them out.
I wonder why it keeps popping up on your timeline.
It's weird that it keeps popping up on my timeline.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's like
they know.
It's like a sponsored thing. And I'm telling you something about that after we finish talking about this. About him talking about that. This dude walked away from $50 million 11 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when his integrity, when he looked at it and said, my integrity is worth more than $50 million. To me, all those people in the Me Too movement can take a lesson from him on that, because he just made $60 million off of those three specials that he just did. You as a person needs to figure out what your line is and what your value is to you. And at some point you have to take a stand for you, and nobody else can do that for you. So for me, that was, that's a reminder to me about that. And then the shit that he said about the Me Too movement and about, Harvey Weinstein, shit that I've been saying. So I have to throw away like all the shit, new shit that I've been writing, because he touched on a lot of the shit.
He did.
So I think
there's like three different people that I saw talk about how they had to go write completely new sets now.
Yeah. Like he pretty much touched on all the new shit that I wrote. So I'm a little pissed off about that.
I mean, that's the whole rub on stand-up comedy is, if you're not somebody who's on TV, you're going to have very similar thoughts to somebody who might be, and they're yours. Yeah. You've had them, but if you go out and do them, they're going to, you're copying Chappelle, or you're trying to copy whoever.
It's like, no, motherfucker, I wrote these before the special came out.
But it doesn't matter. You gotta check it out. It's one of the reasons that I found stand-up so frustrating at times.
Yeah.
Is we all have shared experiences.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be a similarity in what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And Adam Carolla touches on this, and I haven't listened to him in ages, but he touched on this a lot. He's like, two reasonably smart people who are funny people are going to see something and have a very similar take on it. It doesn't mean you're stealing from anybody.
Right.
So, I'm sorry, go on about your... Yeah. I interrupted you.
Oh, no. That's fine. But that is the case. And I'm still trying to figure out how to use my material without... I'm going to acknowledge the fact, I think when I use my material, I think I'm going to acknowledge the fact that it comes close, but I'm not throwing away my shit because I wrote it.
I
worked hard for it. Shit.
What you do is you start out by saying, look, I'm going to say some things, and I want to acknowledge Dave Chappelle for having the courage to say all these things that I said first. Now.
Yeah.
And then just roll into it.
I think that's a good idea. But the,
then you have to say, even though Nate Darling told me about this, to say it this way.
No, no, I'm not going to do that.
No,
I'm just going to say
I'm kidding. I'm fucking around.
But the shit with the, but the whole country being a bunch of bitch ass niggas, that shit was hilarious.
Yep.
And it's sad that we've gotten to, it's good and it's bad that we've gotten to the place that we've gotten, because you have more people that are aware of certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a lot of people who are, you had a lot of people who, so the trend of white people being oversensitive for minority people has pretty much gone to like another level. So now people who are so-called awoke.
Oh, the woke folk.
The woke
yeah.
folk. I hate them as much as I hate liberals right now. Because you're not really woke. You're semi-conscious. Because if you're actually woke, you realize that people are going to make mistakes and that that's a part of the process. And so you don't necessarily judge them for the mistakes. You'd be like, oh, okay. I remember when I did that stupid shit. I made my way out of it. That person will make their way out of it too. Or how can I help that person make their way out of it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what really being awoke is. These motherfuckers are semi-conscious and all they're doing is throwing stones.
Oh yeah, it's pitchforks and torches.
Yes. Our old buddy Larry is one of those people. And I've seen a few other people that, that post shit and I'm like, you guys still don't get it.
Look, I said from the beginning of this whole Me Too movement, this is not mine. This is for me to listen, to take in and appreciate their experiences.
Yeah.
This is not for me to jump on board and show how much I'm in with them and how badly I feel for them. Because all that is taking their situation
yeah.
and making it about me.
Exactly.
It's not about me. It isn't. It's not about you. It's about the people. If you are a woman and you have a story like that, and from what I've been told, literally every woman has stories like this.
Yes.
Some of them come from situations where the person that did it has no idea.
Yes.
Of the damage that they were doing and the impacts that it had. And other instances where people were incredibly aware of what they were doing. And there's a vast difference between the two. But again, that's their story, it's their experience, and my job as a human being is to listen to it and go, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah. That's not my job.
but that's really it's not about me going, oh yeah, well no, we're it's tell your story.
Yeah.
Tell your story. If the whole point of the Me Too movement is these women felt like they couldn't tell their story. Let them.
Yeah.
The Golden Globes, let them. And in a very, very, I thought Seth Meyers was the perfect host for the year. I thought he handled it incredibly well.
Yeah.
I thought Oprah in her speech was so incredibly about that movement without alienating and vilifying all men.
And then Natalie Portman did her shit when they did the directors.
Well, Natalie Portman can fuck off. I saw that and I'm like, really? Here's where you're going to do that. I understand that there are plenty of female directors, and yes, there could be more. They're very talented women in film. But why are you standing up there trying to, which one or two of these guys don't deserve to be here?
Yeah.
Which one of these two guys don't deserve to be here? Point them out, Natalie.
So remember how post-racial America's gone?
Yeah, it's going great.
Yeah, that's me too.
It's going great.
It's going great. That's me too.
I don't want equality. I want to punish you for the past.
That's me too. That's what, and that's the thing that he pointed out
that Dave points out in this special is remember. Yeah, that's going to be me too.
That's a lot. The thing is, any movement is going to start out with good intentions.
Yes.
And it's going to get grabbed, and there's going to be people who are going to twist it and use it for what they want to. I go back to my statement that I will stand by forever. Stop being assholes to each other.
I concur.
That's it.
What about you, Jason? Do you concur with Mr. Darling? Are you going to get on board with Nate? And
Are you too woke?
Are you too woke to say stop being assholes to each other?
People should stop being assholes to each other. I mean, that's fucking basic fucking kindergarten rules. I mean, Jesus Christ. Like,
But we can't. So many people don't.
They should just fucking behave.
Quit being dicks.
Stop being a fucking asshole.
Quit being a dick.
But being assholes is sometimes fun. So I'm not going to stop being an asshole.
Sometimes it's good to just tweak people for fun.
Yes.
Occasionally.
Occasionally.
Speaking of which, someone decided to put together all of Kanye West's favorite noises as heard on his recordings. This has 1.5 million views on YouTube.
He's grown.
Crazy, dude. I was more. I didn't. I just.
You know, Jason, I want to apologize. Now I understand why you call him a musical genius.
You're taking something that was made and utilized. That's like taking a flute out of every one of Beethoven's concertos that he's ever made and using it randomly in line. That's all you're doing. One of the things that Kanye West has done better than any other, like, has done and revolutionized in hip-hop, and continued in hip-hop, is the use of his voice in making the music. And he has done that. I can name probably almost every song that these come from. That is not actually real. That's actually an effect that they added. Some of those were not the actual sounds, but, like that was repeated. Man, fucking ridiculous.
Kareem, thoughts? The musical genius of Kanye West?
Shit.
I'm tweaking right now. Look, I'm just playing something on YouTube.
It's taking stuff out of context.
As Black Thought said, pre-Kanye, pre-Kardashian Kanye was Kanye. Musically is a musical genius. He is a production phenomenon. I'm going to give him that. His fucking ego has made him a target.
Oh, absolutely.
And the fact that he doesn't have that since his mother passed, he hasn't had anybody who's been able to rein him in is probably his biggest undoing. And I just hope at some point somebody's able to who really cares about him, and I'm not talking about Kim Kardashian, but somebody who knew him before this shit can get to him and get him back to the point of being the person that his mother would have been proud of.
His first three albums that he made are probably on my top 10 list, and his second album, Late Registration, is just... Like every song is just fucking amazing and just just awesome. And then My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which was after his mom, but the thing that he went and like worked on for like 8 months in Hawaii, is a genius album. It's a genius level album.
And you got to just talk about his albums. He says the music that he's done that you don't even know.
Yeah, no, Common. His the stuff they did with Common. Common's B album is one of my favorite albums. It's in my car right now. Yeah. The Tal of Kweli, Beautiful Struggle, amazing fucking album. The stuff that he did with Anthony Hamilton, fucking amazing.
Alicia Keys.
Yeah, I mean,
so he's worked with a ton of people, and you don't really realize that.
Here's the thing:
it's him.
I will not dispute Kanye's genius as a producer.
Yes.
As an artist, I'm not sold. As a producer, 1,000%.
I can agree with you there.
1,000%.
Like I said, it's the fact that after his mom passed, he just kind of went.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was so close, and it was just so out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he blames himself for that a lot.
Yeah, since he paid for the surgery. He,
right.
Yeah. Honestly, if you want... Like that podcast I listened to, the Dissect podcast, that's from a local boy here in Sacramento. He's now He quit his job. He was able to quit his job because of that podcast. He got a deal with Spotify to create more seasons of the podcast. And his first album was all on Kendrick Lamar. And a big part of it was he made a book, Black of the Berry, with an artist. He's donated thousands of dollars to that foundation. He's donated now thousands of dollars to Kanye West's mom's foundation. But his second season is about My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And listening to that, you listen to this podcast, and it's amazing. I like Kanye West, but then listening to that podcast, He's a fucking genius, and that album was a masterpiece. And sonically, what he does, what he says, is just ridiculous. Thanks for talking about Kanye.
Yeah. And he actually was the weakest lyricist out of that group of MCs, but he had the production.
Yeah, amazing producer.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing. We're running very late.
Let's leave the hustle and bustle for small town news.
We just have to wrap it up. Kareem, you might want to take notes because I know you're going to North Dakota soon. Marilyn,
summer.
Marilyn Haggerty says hot dish is a hearty winter mainstay. So much for burgers and hot dogs. So much for eating out all the time. It's January and time to bring on the hot dish or casserole or whatever you call it. It's a mainstay for many a family. And at the home of Judy and David Lohr in East Grand Forks, it's been a mainstay for more than 50 years of marriage. Now the three grand boys who live nearby enjoy their grandmother's hot dish. It's simple macaroni, hamburger, hot dish with tomato and cream of chicken soup. Never corn! Never corn! She serves that separately with bran muffins. Now here's the way Judy Lohr creates what she calls grandma's hot dish. 3 cups elbow macaroni. By the way, this is printed in the paper. 1.5 pounds of ground beef, 2 cans of tomato soup, 1 can of cream of chicken soup.
Sounds like my grandma's recipe.
Here's what you do, Jason. You brown the ground beef and season it with a small amount of salt, pepper, and minced onion. Drain and set aside. Cook the macaroni until almost tender. Drain and mix with the soups and ground beef. Cover with plastic wrap and microwave for 13 to 15 minutes. Stirring a couple of times. Judy Lohr serves the hot dish with corn, bran muffins, carrot sticks, and some fruit. Never, she says, does she ever put the corn in the hot dish. The grandsons don't like it that way, and she doesn't add salt to the hot dish because the soups provide enough sodium.
Can I just point something out real quick that really upsets me about this recipe?
What's that?
Can we go up to the top again? I just want to make sure that I'm not going to say something that's not... Okay. So it clearly says in Judy's hot dish, the recipe, go down a little bit where it says what the recipe is. This lady, man, she fucked it up. 3 cups of elbow macaroni, 1.5 pounds of ground beef, 2 cans of tomato, 1 can of cream and chicken noodle. And then she says, moments later, minced onion.
No,
they didn't say to add the minced onion.
Well, see, that's what you season with. It's a seasoning, not an ingredient.
But it needs to be in the... What happens if you don't have an onion and you go to make it? Like, if I would have just gotten to make this and looked at what the recipe had called for, I would have missed that.
You sure would have. What if you didn't have salt or pepper? Anyway.
I'm not a heathen.
When her grandsons were younger, they were happy with just a spoonful of hot dish on their plates. Now, as they range from ages 12 to 15, they fill their whole plates and come back for seconds. This time of year, Laura says the boys are busy with basketball, and they all play in the bands at their schools. The hot dish, she says, has grown along with them. Laura figures she's the cook-at-home generation. Starting just down the road of the 70s, she says, we only ate out on a rare treat when I was growing up, and we couldn't afford it when we had a young family. These days, she and her husband enjoy eating out. Maybe one night a week or after church on Sunday.
And they both enjoy it.
They're out and about enough.
Something tells me that she probably enjoys it more.
They're out and about enough to partake of concession food or quick stop meals on the way to or from games. But, she cringes at the thought of her husband's favorite foot-long hot dog with fried onions at the Minnesota State Fair. But she enjoys cheese curds, oof da tacos, and French fries, as well as caramel apple slices, and malts. She said, hot dish sounds really good after that. By the way, you can reach Marilyn at mhaggerty@gra.midco.net. Or you can call her at 701-772-1055. Am I betraying anything? No, her phone number is printed in the paper.
It's published on the internet.
And it's on the internet.
I'm going to have to call her. I'm going to have to complain about not having that on.
You know, I don't want to make the mistake that I made with Gordy Little and not let Marilyn know what a mainstay she's become. Yeah. We lost Gordy far too soon without letting him know.
We need to let her know.
True. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Nate Darling Show. God, we went long, but we've been away for a few weeks, so
we had a lot to get off on our
talk about.
We did, and we did it all. So, everybody, have a great weekend. Stay classy out there. If you're on the East Coast, stay warm.
Happy New Year!
Yeah, Happy New Year, everybody. Oh, yeah.
We have new residents in our place right now.
Oh yeah,
they're Christine's parents are with us for the next month because it's -29 degrees. In Watertown.
Mm-hmm. And it's covered in snow.
-29 degrees. Do you know what happens when I say in my house, man, it's cold outside. It's 40 degrees outside. Do you know what I hear?
Shut up.
Yeah. Pretty much like a F you, Jason.
I think that makes perfect sense. At least in that situation. So we'll see you next week with fresh new episodes. Bye-bye.